Welcome to Total Retail Talks, your podcast channel for retail knowledge.
Hello, retail professionals. Welcome to episode 7 of Total Retail Talks. I'm Melissa Campanelli, editor-in-chief of Total Retail, and I'm here today joined by Mark Wolverton, the president and CEO of Lush Cosmetics North America. How are you doing today, Mark?
Wonderful, thank you. How are you?
Great. Thanks for taking the time today. So let's start out just by, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and Lush? What's the history of the brand?
Well, my family owns the oldest brokerage firm in Canada, and I grew up in the stock market, and so we were always looking around for different businesses to get involved in. I had a friend who was in the UK and saw a lineup of people on the street outside of King's Road and went in and purchased some products. That was at the stage where our UK partners had three stores, one in Poole, Dorset, and two in central London. And this particular store was the King's Road store. And so we bought some products and brought them back, and we had a look at them back in Vancouver, which is where I'm based out of, and decided that it was worth going after to see whether going after the company over there to see whether we could partner with them to bring the brand to the Canadian marketplace. So that was 1996. And I guess part of the reason was, you know, it was a offering of, you know, environmental, natural, unpackaged cosmetics and bath and body products. And, you know, the West Coast of North America, especially up in Vancouver, has sort of an affinity for the outdoors and health, and so we thought that it would work well in the Canadian West Coast market. So we went back over there, organized a meeting, and over a couple of months organized to bring the brand to the Canadian marketplace. So that was January of 1996 when we signed a deal with them. We had a factory to produce the products open in about 6 weeks, and we opened our first store in April of 1996.
Great. So that's the background around Canada. What about how did it end up, or did you help bring it over to the U.S.?
Yeah, well, they were the original manufacturers and developers of most of the Body Shop products, their design team. They did a really cult brand out of the U.K. by mail in the early 90s called Cosmetics To Go. And they had sold out the manufacturing and retail rights for Body Shop products to Anita Roddick in sort of 88, and they were restricted from doing retail in the same sector for 5 years, so that's why they did the Cosmetic To Go mail order brand. But as soon as the retail non-compete ended, they opened the Lush brand in the UK, and we brought it over to Canada. We operated it for 5 years in Canada, 6 years in Canada before we rolled into the US market, where we opened in San Francisco in December of 2002. And in the meantime, you know, they used the model of the partnership joint venture agreement that we had done with the Canadian marketplace to start opening partnerships with other countries in Europe. Today we're 20 years later, we're in 48 countries around the world. Most of the countries are corporately owned. There are a few partnerships left, like the North American market, places like Russia, where you need a local partner. But they've sort of consolidated the ownership over the years to maintain brand integrity across all of the markets.
Yeah, really interesting. I didn't realize it had such a varied background. I remember going into the first Lush store in New York City. I think it was like over by Penn Station, if I'm not mistaken.
It was in the Herald Square building.
Yeah.
Since revamped into H&M there.
Right, and I just remember being so, you know, taken aback by the product, the display, the way everything was so natural, the blocks of soap. I can just picture them. So, let's talk a little bit about the products. I mean, I understand that you have more than 150 new products slated to hit stores this year. So Why don't you tell me about the products and why is this a good time to be expanding?
It's interesting because when we started originally in the marketplace, the what kept us ahead of competition was innovation and, you know, along with a bunch of other things, but innovation and launching of new products. So we traditionally dropped 30% of the product range every year and replaced it with new products. And so, you know, the innovation engine behind the brand in terms of the product creators is second to none in natural formulation. And so, you know, we've gone through part of the last sort of 10 years redoing and adding to different categories, mostly seasonal, but some additions throughout the year. And so it was sort of time to try and figure out how we could break the mold in store size. And so they did it by doing a creation of a whole new slate of products. So they did 240 new products in 100 days.
Wow.
Plus, in addition to that, because it's the season, they've also created 100 new seasonal items. So, you know, that's products across all major categories. It's a relook at every category, and adding to them and sort of reformulating to get more color and fragrance and visual into them. Mm-hmm. They're all effects-led products, so, you know, products are created for the most part to create an effect on your skin or your hair in order to provide the right experience for the customer. So we have a very consultation-based customer experience in the stores, where you actually get a consultation on your hair type, your skin type, and then we match the products to your to exactly what you need. So you're buying something that you take home and you actually use and you like, and you're not taking it home, leaving it on the shelf, and then putting it in the landfill. So we've added to, so in this store, so they opened an Oxford Street store, one of the busiest streets in London, 9,000 square feet.
Wow.
Which is, you know, our traditional footprint in North America is 800 square feet.
Yeah.
So that's additions to hair care, a whole new hair care line, including things like hot oil treatments that you can take home and make up at home. Lots of additions to skincare line, including some really amazing skincare items like Magical Moringa, which is a real favorite of mine. Adding to the fragrance line, so they do it in almost like albums, like a musical album. So there's 10 or 12 different new fragrances per album. So they've just launched album 3, and we're about to come out with album 4 in the spring. Huge increase in bath products added to the range. Makeup, we've added 100 SKUs and a total revamp of the line. And so they did this to sort of fill a 9,000 square foot store with a much bigger experiential impact for the customer. And for us in North America, it means that we can look at much larger stores with a much better experience and consultation platform for the customers. And it's sort of a little bit like if you look at the Sephora model, you know, they have their 3,000 or 4,000 square foot small footprint stores. They have some 8,000 or 9,000 square foot large footprint stores, and then they have some very big flagship ones like their Champs-Élysées store. And they manage to get, you know, completely different volumes and different offerings in terms of product line through the different sizes of stores, along with a much more interactive based model, which is what we've put into the Oxford Street store and see coming into the North American market starting in a couple of months.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about that. I just find it interesting that, you know, to sort of look at it that way, look at filling the store, you know, instead of, like, in other words, the venue comes first and then the product. Just that's a really interesting way of looking at it. So tell me about some of the developments in store that you have planned. Are you doing a lot with mobile, or what are some things you can talk about there?
We have a completely mobile responsive site. Looking at developing a native app for ourselves, you know, within the stores, there's in the Oxford Street store, there's a spa, so it's a spa on one floor of the store. There's a fragrance gallery in the store in Oxford Street, which is an interesting concept. There's an area where you can actually get a hot air treatment, and hair treatments that you can get demoed on you directly in the store. And so there's quite a bit of interesting interactive positioning within the store where customers come in and spend, you know, hours at different merchandise areas interacting with the product. We create something called Fun, which is, it's kind of like a Play-Doh concept. Huh. And you can use that for washing your hair, washing your clothes, washing your body. And it's also moldable in different colors like Play-Doh. So there's a whole setup in the front of the store where the kids can come in and make models of things out of the actual product. And so very interactive.
Yeah. So do you have plans for these kinds of, you're talking about the Oxford Street store, I'm thinking. So do you have plans for these kinds of stores in the U.S. and Canada?
We're in the middle of, so we've gotten to the point where we have so much volume in our stores across the North American marketplace. You know, you mentioned an 800 square foot store, our average store volume is now up to close to 1.8 million in sales. Some of them are way above that, and you know, you just can't get the right customer experience and traffic, especially women with strollers and all the rest, through a store like that. And so we've got the job ahead of us to move 110 of our 230 store portfolio to larger footprint stores. That's everything from, you know, we're starting off doing some sort of 2,000 to 2,500, 3,000 square foot stores, which for us, you know, you can imagine a store that's 500 square feet moving to 2,500 square feet is a huge, huge change. Places like that are already sort of locked in for the next few months are places like Oak Brook, Scottsdale, North Park Store, Roosevelt Field, Woodfield, just working with Bellevue and Washington to move that store. You know, there's 20 of those that are coming in the next sort of 8 months that are sort of a much bigger footprint than we're used to, and we're just trying to model them out and get the right format and mix for them. You know, and you think about the amount of innovation, you know, between now and Christmas, we have 43 new products launching, 43 new gifts, some amazing reusable things. If you look at our lineup through Christmas time or through next summer, we're adding 277 new products to the range. You know, and you think about the production of that just between now and Christmas, we're producing 16 million products. But that's in the face of 6 years of double-digit same-store sales growth. With 44% growth between now and Christmas. So, you know, it's there's demand there for it, and we just have to position ourselves to be able to provide the right experience in the stores.
So just a couple more questions. So since many of our listeners are in the marketing e-commerce space, can you tell us a little bit about anything you can about your e-commerce, digital marketing, or any connections with the stores that you have planned now and that you have now and that you maybe are planning or thinking about for the holidays?
You know, we don't do a lot of advertising, if any. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all organic growth. We do a lot of press through our PR business and have articles and things written like the one we're doing today. But through the e-commerce platform, it's a lot of content-based marketing. So we try and create two-way interactive situations through all channels. It's a story-based, storytelling-based format. You know, a lot of rich content, a lot of engaging articles. We're in the middle of a web redesign for the Christmas season. Hmm. So it's a lot of online and social. And really the customers, you know, are reacting in the right way to what we're doing. You know, we've got, we do a lot of videos on YouTube. which provide interesting views into manufacturing and into product use and where our raw materials come from, where we're working with farmers globally to get sustainable partnerships with local farmers in around the world for our raw materials. And you know, if you look at the type of customer reaction to all that, you know, we ended up with 10 million page views for YouTube. We've got 900,000 Facebook followers.
Wow.
You know, Instagram is the highest growing channel with 1.6 million. And you just see we've launched a shoppable Instagram format, so you can shop right on Instagram. You know, and like I said, we've got the mobile responsive website for Christmas with the app, but the app is coming in February. And that's for a concept that we're doing called The Kitchen. And The Kitchen is, it's kind of like an online shop, cooking show. So it's a look into production. And so it's a production room set up where you've got a host that interviews the people making the product. You've got video into the product procedure for making the product. And we do three or four products a day in about 1,000 item run. And then the customers can buy those that day and have them show up at their house the next day. So it's fresh, it's handmade, it shows you the ingredients and how, you know, with the quality of them and the format for producing the product. So it's a step-by-step view into the production of our products, and a lot of exclusive products get launched from that format.
That's a great idea, since that's you know, sort of where you guys come from, is the ingredients and the products themselves. Okay, so as a CEO of a large, you know, well-known brand, I just have to ask you, as we end here, I mean, what's the one issue that keeps you up at night as a retail professional in today's world? I mean, is there something that you are tracking that you're most, you know, that's on your mind?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we have, you know, I try and provide the best customer experience and the best staff experience that we can within the sort of realms of what we can possibly do at any time without taking a huge amount of risk. And so, you know, when you think about, you know, double-digit like-for-like and the amount of customer growth we've had and you know, the size of the stores and getting people through, you know, what keeps me up at night is how am I going to move 110 stores to larger format within a reasonable period of time. And quite frankly, you know, that's a lot of work, and we're currently, you know, trying to do about five a day, but five a month in terms of changeover. But it's finding the real estate, it's getting the stores set up differently, and really it's about a 36-month process that I'd like to do in 12 months if I could. So I sit and worry about how am I going to provide the right experience for the customer and the staff, you know, in a reasonable period of time. And quite frankly, with the product innovation that's going on with our product creators, you know, by the time I get through 110 stores, I'm going to have another 110 to do right on the back of that. So, you know, you look at that and it might be a 5 or 6 year process that you really should be doing in 12 months if you could do it. So very, very tough to try and meet the market, right?
Yeah, time management is a big problem for everybody.
It is.
Thank you so much, Mark, for today's podcast. And I also want to thanks everybody listening to this edition of Total Retail Talks. To please check out our podcast channel page, mytotalretail.com/podcast for our show notes. And also to let you know that Total Retail Talks is available on iTunes and Stitcher. But you can also subscribe on our podcast channel as well. And please follow us on Twitter at MyTotalRetail or on Facebook at facebook.com/MyTotalRetail.